Tēnā koutou te whānau Auckland Unitarians. Tēnā koutou ngā manuhiri. Nau mai, haere mai. Haere mai ki te hui o te rā nei. Haere mai ki te kaupapa o te rā. Ko Rachel McIntosh, tōku ingoa. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Welcome all, church whānau and visitors, to this place of worship, virtual and physical. Can we stop sharing? Thanks. Virtual and physical. Hi, virtual. Made sacred by Auckland Unitarians for 122 years. Welcome to those joining us remotely, to those here in the building, and to those watching the recording at a later time. You are welcome as you are. You find us as we are. For those here in person, you are all invited to join us for a cup of tea or coffee after the service. It is our sacrament of hospitality. I particularly welcome our guest speaker this morning, Grant Williams from the Maritime Union of New Zealand, or MUNS as we call it. When I met Grant about 10 years ago, he was working as a wharfie who'd been locked out by the Ports of Auckland Limited in a fierce struggle for control of the working lives of port workers. As the employer sought to cut wharfie incomes and establish total flexibility in the workforce, Auckland wharfies stood up to tell their story, that this would destroy any rhythm in their family lives. The struggle was over not just working lives, but whole lives, family lives. Grant was a leader in that struggle, and he came to speak to other unions about the fight on the wharf, and we heard the story of what this meant in Grant's life. And the fight became a key concern for the whole union movement. We stood together right through. I have a t-shirt. And Grant's now a full-time union official, Assistant Secretary of Auckland Local 13 of MUNS. Haere mai ki a koe, e hoa. No, not yet. He thought he was speaking right now. No, that comes later. So today is Labour Day, a commemoration and celebration of the establishment in this country of the 8-hour working day. In early 1840, carpenter Samuel Parnell arrived in Petone from London, and when he was asked to build a store, agreed to do so only on the condition that, on the job, the hours shall only be 8 for the day. He said, "There are 24 hours per day given us. 8 of these should be for work, 8 for sleep, and the remaining 8 for recreation." 50 years later, the 8-hour day had become standard for tradespeople and labourers, but many other workers worked much longer hours. Labour Day parades began in October 1890 as part of a union campaign to force the government to restrict working hours by law rather than just by custom. And in 1899, the Labour Day Act established the public holiday that we now enjoy every fourth Monday in October. 183 years on, there are many stories from right across the movement of working people joining together in solidarity to assert our rights to decent work so that we may live decent lives. We struggle, but we also celebrate. So the words for lighting the chalice come from Florence Kaplow. In recognition of Labour Day, we light this flame to honour all work, including the work of our hands and our backs, in gratitude for all the labours that support the world, and for all those who boldly continue the work of justice, equity, and peace. Thanks, Paul. Now, if you wish, you're welcome to recite with me the covenant of our congregation. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is the sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony. Thus do we covenant with each other and with our God. Thank you, everybody. Many of you will know and remember that our church recently joined a broad community alliance called Te Ohu Whakawhanaunga. And one of the things that we wanted to achieve with that alliance was to have guest speakers from other organisations come to speak to us. And Mungs is also a member of Te Ohu, and Grant's an active member of that alliance. And so Grant said he was interested, and then when I asked him to do this weekend because it's Labor Day, he agreed. So I would like to now welcome Grant to come up the front. Now.
It's just for show. Te whānau o te hāhi Unitarian, tēnā koutou katoa. Ngā haue whā, e ngā whānau whānui, tēnā koutou. Ko Grant Williams toku ingoa no Tamaki Makaurau, take kāinga nāinau, take kāinga tūturu no Manutuke, Tūranga, Gisborne, down that area. So it's a real honour, a little bit shy of coming to a church to discuss, but because Rachel asked, and because of the good work that our organisations do, it is an honour. But I'm not the excellent public speaker people might expect. Anyway, so I said, well, what am I going to talk about? And she said, oh, just who you are, who is Mungs, current issues from Mungs, and what's happening at the moment. So I've been a wharfie for 22 years, 23 years. That's just driving cranes and machinery down the wharf, labour. It's shift work. It was a really good way for me to and my family to get a decent income and livelihood. Although there was a burden of the shift work and being away from the family, but we were able by that means of that work and those conditions, those union negotiated conditions, allowed me to provide for my family and look after my everything that they needed. It was a real boon for me, and I really appreciated those conditions. Part of being down there was that I was interested in people. I'm a social person, and I was interested in looking up for other people, caring, giving, being interested. I was a delegate virtually from the moment I started down there, and then got involved in negotiations, and over time learnt the industry, the job, the people, and started getting into the politics of it and understanding the politics of it. I'm Māori. I come from my family from the East Coast. I have a mixed heritage, broadly from Brittany, Scotland, Wales, England. Well, I don't know if that's broad, Germany, but you know, that area and here. So I'm very culturally aware, but in Aotearoa, New Zealand, I consider myself Māori. Okay. I'm part of the urban drift. Well, my family started off as pretty much public servants, whether it's the post office or tolls or airway service. In those days, NAC and Ministry of Works, all of those government departments, most of my family were in those roles. So I think the public service and being a public servant, I think really sits strongly in my family. It definitely does with my mother and father. So that's a little bit about me. I'm the oldest of my family. I'm the one you come to when you need stuff done. When no one else would deal with it or unable to, I'm the one you, let's get this thing done. So that's a bit about me. The Maritime Union of New Zealand, it's, well, it's the seafarers and the watersiders. They amalgamated in 2002 and they became the Maritime Union of New Zealand. Before that, they were very involved politically and industrially in nearly everything from the founding of the colonising of New Zealand and on, you know, up to today. Very political of the members that I, when I joined, they were very well read. They were very, a lot of people from England or Great Britain, and they all had very strong ideas, they had very strong values, but the main thing I think is things like solidarity, unity, equity and peace. They're the core tenets of the of our union, and that's what we pursue. It's a rough environment in the union. It can be rough for unions and for the workers. So with the Maritime Union and the Ports of Auckland, it's been a very hard time. Rachel mentioned that she met me 10 years ago, 2014. And it was a really difficult time. We had our conditions stripped from us in the negotiations. And like she said, the flexibility that was wanted by the employer at the time was extreme. It was essentially full flexibility from the worker with no guarantees. And that was the essence of the... But on the back of that became a project of automation to actually remove our jobs. And then when the automation failed, the other problem was the running down of conditions to the point where people were in danger of their lives at work. And terribly and tragically, we lost some lives, which we hadn't for a long time. I'll speak to that. You know, I won't go to the detail of what caused it or how, but it's a very hard thing to be in a workplace where someone passes away. It's difficult anyway, but when it's due to the nature of the work and not doing things as they should be, it's worse. When they're younger than you, it's worse. When they have family and dependents, it's worse. And, you know, I'm nearly at tears now, just thinking about it. And that's, everyone in that workforce is virtually in that state all the time. And I just, you know, it's a sad thing. But we got through it. We're working through it to improve it. And we've looked after the people that have been hurt. So that we make the best of that. And we move on and we learn the lessons. Well, we hope we learn the lessons. But then I find now that we've come to a situation where we have a good working relationship with the management at the port and health and safety has improved and we're engaged and we're a part of the fix and we're assisting to improve the output of the port to make it more valuable, make it more efficient, make it more beneficial for the people of Auckland. And then our latest issue was someone mentioning that there's a crisis on cost of living. And that to fix it, there might be the opportunity to, well, they say that selling the port might be an answer to fix that. Or some arrangements around that, the management of the port. So I suppose I'm sorry if I'm just rambling on a bit, but this is just how, this is what you get, you know? So now we get to the situation where we've gone through all of that, well, I have. And it's a continuum, you know. Nothing's perfect in the world, and this is my experience, so I don't expect it to be all fine for the rest of my life, but right now we're in a bit of a stage where I have deep concerns, not just for the workforce there, and not so much the workforce and my members, but really the people of Auckland and the communities. I feel we are looking at things too component-wise, and not how they interact or interrelate with everything else. So the income subsidy that a near monopoly like the port has in terms of trading goods and in and out, it's a very strategic asset in terms of foreign exchange or balance of payments in terms of trade. Any adjustment of that, because it's essentially, it's not quite a monopoly, but it's not far off. It provides an income, which provides a subsidy to the rate space, which ends up being part of the spend for all our community projects and all the things that we really want done, you know? And I worry that the talk about selling it for a quick fix to adjust this cost of living crisis now will damage its efficacy in the future in terms of ownership arrangements, entanglement, but most importantly about allowing a profit-driven private industry or enterprise having the controls of it. Because then we start losing our leverage, and then we start seeing a drain from the investment. That's what I'm worried about, and that's what I'm concerned of at the moment. And, you know, on the back of all the things we've just sort of got to the mend and fix, this is a big thing that's in front of us right now. So, what are we doing about it? Well, we have to be, the whole last 10 years we've learnt to be different in our approach. We're not an island alone. We are amongst many other people that have similar interests. So the first thing we do is we go to politicians and we bring them the issue and bring up to them what the issue is. But I'll tell you that they're quite interesting because they are very, they stay in their own lane too, and they don't seem to see how this, you know, infrastructure community, they don't seem to get it. So you have to explain it to them. We created a report. So we have international allegiances with unions overseas. We're part of the International Transport Federation. We work closely with the ALWU, ALA and MUA, which are the waterside unions in the States and Australia. Amongst them, we put together a report about the sale of public assets in Australia and the outcomes of them. And the essential outcome is that as soon as they get in, they up the rates. And so in this scenario that we're talking about, the ratepayers may pay less, but every consumer will pay more. And we asked economists, we've asked different situations. They all had the same result in terms of increases in costs. And they all had the other result of entanglement of the ownership of the port or the land or the lease arrangements. It's a concern having 30-year leases plus, because it's almost intergenerational. You could almost have a whole generation grow up without even knowing it's a public asset if it's run by a certain entity. It's the leverage that those organisations can get over that time span to be able to, well, you know, we're virtually, it's almost squatting. So that's what we're, that's our main issue at the moment. We've been engaging with MPs prior to the election. We're still searching for where that lay will be after the election. We go to the councillors, so we have to learn about the council. We have to learn who's who in the council, what their weighting is, and so we've done that, we've approached the councillors, and I think we've got a good balance in our favour at the moment. But there's a lot of lobbying in the background that we have no control of, like, if you do this, we might be able to give you that type thing. We've also got, we've found that the Māori statutory board may have some say in it, so we have to go and lobby them now to make sure. So we've got a report that shows failed or the problems of selling ports overseas, so that's, we send that to them so they understand our economic argument. Our economic argument, we have an economist that, you know, to support that we just didn't make the argument up out of thin air. We also Yeah, we also have our media people putting press releases out all the time. We've also had a survey done recently of the people of Auckland about their appetite for a port sale, and obviously it says they're in favour of keeping it, so that's encouraging. But that's the level of work that we have to put in to make sure that our issue is heard. I suppose the other thing is, how can other people help us? Well, we have to do this because it's in our interest area, and we have to keep this voice up because it's for the people of Auckland. It doesn't just affect our workers, it affects their families and communities. So we feel that there's an obligation to make sure that this is addressed for other people to help us. I suppose the main thing is exactly what we're doing: be interested, be aware of the issues, read the material. So go to the website, find the article and put your email in and get the updates so that you're made aware of the issue. Then the other one is that exercise your citizenry, as a ratepayer, as a part of the community of Auckland. Write to your MPs, write to your councillors, get them to take up the issue and socialise it so it's more well known. That's where we're at the moment. It's really really nice to be able to come and share this with you, and I hope you can see, without me rah-rahing it up, how really important and significant the sale of our jewel of our crown for this region. So much tax money has gone into that, and the building and development of it. So many jobs and industry rely on it being successfully run, that it does facilitate a public service, and it should be kept in Aucklanders' hands. So that's the Mun's stance there. To finish it off, I suppose for me the most important thing about it is it's about the future generations and unintended consequences. In my short 55-year life, one thing I've been learning lately is that there are a lot of actions that have gone on that have unintended consequences. I worry that by being blasé about the ownership of the port, not being transparent about it, not discussing it out openly, I feel that we are actually in danger of risking the future of our children in this community, a major asset that they could have. They might need in the climate change environment in the near future, and I think they're being very short-sighted if we just want to pay a three-year stint worth of bills by selling the house. That's essentially how I see it. So I hope you guys can see our point of view from the Maritime Union, and I really do hope that you can come on board to help and assist in any way you can. Have I hit my 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. There was it was really quite a surprise to be invited here, and I was thinking of all my, now what am I going to do at a church? And you start thinking about purer ideals, I think, or a better you, or how you'd like to be as a, you know, a person, and I'm just glad that we're part of Te Ohu Whakawhanaunga. I'm just so glad that Rachel's invited me and that I can meet you today and share on behalf of my members and with you. And I really appreciate it. And you know, it's a powerful thing you guys have here and that you're continuing. So it's really had an impact on me, and it's been a real honour to be here to speak to you today. Okay.
So I've heard Grant speak quite a few times, and I had no idea that he didn't consider himself a good public speaker. because it's always he's always engaging. He always speaks from the heart, and he always makes sense. So thank you, Grant, for that. Oh, can I, Henricus? Can I call on you again? Please join me as we say the words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Forgot to put the snuffer out. Sorry about that, Paul. Thank you. Okay. So my closing words, I found online a poet called K.E. Cummins. I couldn't find anything out about this person other than that they've got about 45 poems online, but it's called We Are. We are the beloved community, an antidote to despair. Dark things cause their opposites, because when night falls, we must light fires. I found kindling in a crevasse and called it hope. Some things will always be the same. So we change, we move, we rise, we burn. Amen.